Welcome. ESPN 1700 AM is the Real Estate Radio Hour. Joining us today, we have Chris McCurgy, estate planning attorney, one of my paintball buddies, and now a published author. We will be going through his article, Estate Planning for New Parents and Parents-to-Be. He had published the Carmel Valley Life publication, right?
That's correct.
Wow. And you are a father-to-be.
I am. Kids due in September.
It's a little bit scary.
Very scary.
And if you're not scared, you haven't researched it enough.
Trust me, I've done nothing but research. Okay. Scared, excited, having a good time.
Awesome. Also with us today, Sean Manat. He is a financial advisor with Edward Jones, another paintball buddy of mine. So on the weekends, we go out and shoot each other when it's time, when the kids and the wife let us.
That's right.
Which is kind of less and less
yes.
nowadays. Also going to talk about kids and planning for their education. So different types of college saving plans. One is a 529 plan that we're going to hit on really hard, but go through the different options and kind of get some idea of, well, scary to understand how much it's going to cost. Yeah. And how many millions we're going to have to put away a week to get to that number, right? It's a scary number.
It is a scary number.
But it's,
planning can help.
Planning can help. Well, let's hope so. So Chris, with his general becoming a parent, I guess his aura about him, has given him the opportunity to look at life. Well, we're gonna kind of compare what life looks like without kids, what life looks like with young kids, and then what life looks like, well, I'm going to say without kids again, but let's say that they're grown and on their way. You know, so when they're out of the nest, after you got them off to college, possibly through college, what does life look like then? So before, during, and after raising kids, so to speak. And Sean is frankly going to help us make sure we reach the afterlife stages, meaning there's enough money set aside to send him out of the nest to college.
That's right.
All about kids today. So in general, Chris, how is estate planning different before, during, and after kids?
Oh, it's different drastically in the sense you care more once you have kids in certain aspects. You have kids, the most important thing is the aspect of guardianship, right? If your children are under the age of 18, you want to make sure that if something were to happen to you or your spouse, that your children were taken care of. If you're single, your most important concern is, well, I have some money. I want to make sure that people I care about get them. If you're married and have kids, now you have to worry about your state. You have to worry about your wife, and you have to worry about your children. You know, who takes care of your children if something were to happen to you? Who gets your assets if something happens to you? Those are your key concerns at that point.
Okay. And what documents, and this is what the whole show is about, is the documents you put in place to identify, direct, secure that all of those items are going to go to the right place should the unexpected happen?
Absolutely. I mean, general estate planning documents include a trust, a power of a will. A will is necessary in this case, especially if you have children, young children, because you get to designate a guardian or a successor, or a couple of them at that point, to determine who takes care of your kids if something were to happen and you pass on. And it's important because, understand this, just because somebody likes kids and they enjoy being around kids doesn't necessarily make them the best possible guardian for your children.
So I would choose who would take care of my kids or my money that goes to take care of my kids in these documents should I be unable to do so.
Exactly. And understand this. Just because somebody is good with money doesn't mean they're good with kids, and vice versa. Just because somebody's good with kids doesn't mean they're good with money. So you might have to figure out if the person who's the guardian for your children is also the best person to manage your assets at that point. Ideally, you know, they would be the same person, but you'd have to talk to the individual to make sure that they're willing to take on the responsibility of actually taking care of these children for a long period of time.
Yeah, I would. Yeah, a long period of time. Yeah. Right. My daughter's one. It's going to be 17 some years.
There you go.
A very long period of time. And I would imagine over time that person could change.
Absolutely.
That you might want to take care of your kids.
Well, yeah. Think about it this way. If you were to assign your parents, their grandparents, as initial guardians. Well, I always ask my clients the tough questions. What happens if your parents pass away? What happens if you pass away and they're the guardians and your parents pass away? That's why you have to assign successor guardians at that point, right? Ensure the person who will take care of these children is able to do it is willing to take on the responsibility and is good with kids and is able to handle that situation.
So who did you choose?
Well, at the present moment, we chose the grandparents.
Grandparents. I would imagine that's most commonly the case,
absolutely.
Right? Absolutely.
It's the most common case. And then after that, I'm not going to mention the name because I haven't talked to the person yet, but it's definitely not Sean on my left, I'll tell you that.
I got two of my own.
So I would imagine that conversation can be a little hairy, seeing that there's commonly two sets of grandparents.
Yep.
Maybe in a split family, three sets of grandparents. You know, if one got divorced and then remarried, how does one overcome and not alienate one side and still selecting the other? Because you can only choose one, right? You can't choose two grandparents two sets of grandparents.
You can have successors, but you look at the convenience factor. If I live in San Diego and my in-laws are in San Diego, then that's the better option, especially if I trust them a lot. And I do. I love my in-laws. They're great. My family's in the Bay Area. That might make things a little bit more difficult. So you have to think of it in that sense. But, you know, they would be successors. But you also look at the age. You know, if something were to happen to you, you want the person looking after your children to be available for them for the remainder of their young lives till they become adults themselves.
We're talking with Chris McCurgy, estate planning attorney. His website, kmsdlawoffice.com. That's his website, kmsdlawoffice.com. We're talking about estate planning tips for new parents and parents-to-be and kind of how things change before kids, with kids, and after kids. And you mentioned what life would be like when you're single and what life would be like with young kids. What about simply just married? Because that's kind of how you've been for a couple years, right? Married, kids in the future, but none in the oven, so to speak, right? So at that point, who takes care of you? Is there necessity to change anything with respect to my will and trust then?
Well, here's the thing. You know, it interests me when parents come at a much later age to create a trust. And they're doing it's a great job, but it's always good to start early. So my wife and I started our planning even before we had children.
I bet you did.
Even before we got to this position. And the reason is because once we have that system in place, we can now simply modify it as time progresses on.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Instead of creating a new one when we have significant assets, we do it in an early age and just modify it. It's a lot easier way to handle that.
Okay. And so after kids are out of the house, they're off doing their thing. Are there other changes I need to make? I mean, and we kind of just talked about a few of them and also touch on how to make the change.
Oh, yeah, possibly. Of course. You know, think of it this way. When you were 18 years old or even 19 or 20, were you in a position to be able to manage and handle a significant amount of money? I know I wasn't. So I tell parents, you know, if you have kids and, you know, regardless if they have guardianship or not, do you want your children inheriting your life insurance policy at the age of 18? Think
right.
about it. If you were 18 years old and you received a $500,000 life insurance policy, what would you be doing? You know, today you might invest in real estate or, you know, be smart about it, but back then probably not. So at that time, I tell my clients, you know, determine a good age where you want your children to, you know, acquire these assets. It could be, you know, 28, 30 years old. Depends on what you feel comfortable with. Until at that point, you have a trustee who is managing the assets, controlling disbursements. And then when they reach a certain age, when they have, you know, gotten to a point where they can handle their assets, now you can say, okay, I'm going to disburse these assets to these children.
I've heard of people putting certain milestones on the dispersion of assets. For example, had to graduate from college, had to graduate from high school, couldn't be affiliated with a lawsuit, couldn't have a pending lawsuit or any litigation against them. It kind of seems like it's create whatever you want in terms of qualifications to disperse the money.
People do that. I'll be honest, I don't encounter that too often. What I do encounter is age limitations. You know,
okay.
Parents might state, you know, at the age of 18, my child receives a certain amount of disbursement. At the age of 25, when they finish college, they receive a certain amount, and a complete disbursement at the age of 30. It all depends on what they want to do, but, you know, I don't see too often where they post limitations such as that. But, you know, I've heard of that happening.
Well, the idea that it raised to me was kind of the fact that it can be created however you want, right? We talk about age, but there's an unlimited amount of ways the money can be dispersed,
it can.
Right?
It's a living document. You can modify it as it goes along, too.
And so I think you just said that, but what does that mean to be living?
A living document, unlike a will, for example, a will only takes effect once you've passed on, once you've died, right? While you're living, that will has no effect to it at that point. A living document, such as a living trust, is necessary because it takes control even when you're incapacitated. This is where things like your power of attorney, advanced healthcare directives come into play, because if something were to happen to you and you're incapacitated, you're in the hospital, you're not dead yet, your healthcare directives, your power of attorney will determine who manages your finances, who manages your healthcare decisions. And this is important. A lot of people don't think of incapacity as a key element to estate planning, and it's actually a huge element to it.
And so that's one of the ways a trust would come into place if you haven't deceased.
Absolutely.
Yet, correct?
Yeah, it's a living document. So it's working even as we progress on a daily basis. You can, if tomorrow, if your trustee passes away, you can assign a new trustee. You can change guardians. You can, if you have three other children in your lifetime, you can make sure that they're included in your trust. You keep modifying it and you're arranging it during key, significant events during your life to ensure that when you do pass on, that everything's taken care of in your family.
We're talking with Chris McCurgy, estate planning attorney. His website, KMSDlawoffice.com. That's the website, KMSDlawoffice.com. Now, I've been told statistics that are staggering in terms of how many people have trusts and wills. It's a meager number. I've heard it's like 50% don't have them. Are you 50% don't?
It's getting better, but I would say probably more. You know, that's
more than 50% don't have a will and trust in place.
And the reason is because most people assume that a trust is for the Warren Buffetts and the Bill Gates of the world. And it's actually not. It's for anybody who has any assets. I mean, if you have, you know, if you own a house, if you have life insurance, or you have, you know, any significant assets that you want passed down to your children, you want to avoid probate, you want to ensure that their guardianship's taken care of, you want to make sure that your healthcare directives are taken care of. That's why we do estate plans. They're no longer for the extremely wealthy anymore.
Yeah, and that brings up a good point, and we'll touch on this later in the show, but the cost of probate can be extreme, so much so that it way outweighs the cost of creating a will and trust.
Absolutely.
I mean, could be drastically different in terms of the amount of money and when the money is received should the unforeseen happen.
A probate fees are statutorily set, but I mean, if you have a significant amount of significant assets in your estate, once that estate comes out of probate, it's dwindled down by thousands of dollars.
Thousands.
I mean, I did a probate recently for, I think the assets were close to $200,000, and by the time it came out of probate, they'd lost close to $15,000, maybe more actually, out of court fees and administrative fees and attorney fees. And those are statutorily set regardless.
And way, way more expensive than having
Absolutely.
One of these others. So we'll touch on that a little bit more later in the show and go through kind of an example. And you gave a good one. Go through example in more detail. We're talking with Chris McCurgy, estate planning attorney. His website, KMSDlawoffice.com. KMSDlawoffice.com. When we come back, we're going to talk with Sean Manette and scare you all with respect to how much money you need to start saving for your kids' college fund. Ahead of us when we come back. Welcome back. We've been talking with Chris McCurgy, estate planning attorney. His website, KMSDlawoffice.com. That's the website, KMSDlawoffice.com. Okay, Sean, we promised to scare people about how much college costs. So just to emphasize the importance of a college savings plan, let's run through some numbers, and let's use ourselves as the guinea pigs,
okay.
Right? Starting with this guy, Mr. Senior Guinea Pig. He's at, his child is what, negative 18 and a quarter years till they go to college?
Help me, Sean. Help me.
18 and a quarter years. Well, one good thing is you can start already. 529, which is the area that we'll be focusing on as far as a savings plan, you can start before the child is born. And I do this with clients. And the reason why is you can change the beneficiary at any time. So you could have a child now. Little Joey gets a 529. Joey turns out to be a rock star, not going to college. But here comes Jill. So you can just change the beneficiary, and now Jill gets her college paid for.
A lot of musicians in your family, Chris?
Pretty much, you know it.
Pretty much.
I can believe that.
So that's, and I'm sure by contrasting, because I would say, well, what do you mean? I can always change the name on my account and send the money to whoever I want. That's not a big deal. But I think that will really highlight the benefit of being able to change the beneficiary
right.
when compared with other plans,
yeah,
right?
There are things that you can't change a beneficiary to. And 529, again, works great for a couple reasons. One, anyone can contribute to it. So you can contribute to it. The grandparents could contribute to it, friends, family. And I'll tell you what, being experienced and having a couple of beautiful daughters, which are great, and having very loving family members, your house will explode. And I do mean explode with gifts. And being able to say, hey, we've got enough gifts, but the 529 is a great place if you want to do something. Grandparents really jump on that because they want to be able to say, hey, I help the child go to college. So that's a great thing that you can tell people rather than loading the shelves with dolls.
Let's go over how much it's going to cost.
Okay.
Right? Because it is a little bit difficult to say, I'm going to forego X, Y, and Z now so that I can have something in the future without really knowing how high this mountain we have to climb in the future is. And you've got a couple numbers here.
Yep.
Let's shoot for the stars, so to speak. Private university. Bottom of your chart.
Private university.
Oh, man.
Your child is very academically inclined. They want to go to the private university. At a 5% rate of inflation, which, by the way, is a little less than we've seen the past few years, what today costs $41,000 a year to attend, in 18 years for you will be $98,700 to attend.
What about community college?
So we're going from one extreme to the next. Community college, and this is something that when I'm sitting with my clients, I emphasize, is a great way to start for those first 2 years. It's a huge amount of savings and gives the child a chance to, I guess, feel their way and say, what do I want to major in? Community college today, $3,300 a year. Now, that's not room board, that's tuition. However, in 18 years, we're only expecting that cost to raise up to just shy of $8,000. So that's a vast difference of $90,000 per year of going to community college for those first couple of years.
Yeah, it doesn't seem so unattainable to send someone to 2 years worth of community college for a total of $16,000. That seems, you know,
I did community
doable.
College for 2 years.
Right. Well,
it seems very doable in terms of pay. Well, in terms of ability for the parents to pay.
That's
right?
Just it.
Doesn't seem totally unachievable. Probably not overly sexy planning requirements to save $16,000 18 years from now. What is that, like $900 a year? You break that down, you're talking $100 a month, right? Mm-hmm. Nothing extreme there.
Right.
So, but let's focus on the big dog here, right? The big dog, $100,000 a year.
Yep.
Right? So let's say our kid gets into MIT, right? They get into MIT, Stanford. Last thing I want to do is not be able to afford to send them there. What is it I got to do so that 18 years from now, what is you got to do, Chris, so that 18 years from now, little Johnny can go to MIT without a scholarship, assuming they get in? $100,000 a year. So that's $400,000 you're going to need 18 years from now.
Basically, what you would have to do is start saving roughly $700 per month now.
$700 a month now.
In order to get to that type of an
that
education.
Number. And that's assuming a certain rate of return, right? And
yeah, so we're looking at a 7% rate of return, which is a reasonable rate. You know, and if you want to look at it as far as a goal and you say, gee, $700, that's a huge amount. A great way to start, and something where most people are going to go, let's just say a public university. Public university a day on average is $18,400. If you're looking 18 years in advance, we're expecting that to get to around $44,000 through inflation. So a plan that you could do is say, well, what can I afford? If you could afford $100 per month starting now, you start off with $100 per month, and in 5 years, let's say, you know, job's gone well, you're making more money, you're ready to increase that, and you increase that to $350 then at age five on, at that same rate of growth, you would have $118,000 of 529 monies to spend on education, which is great considering the $44,000. So you're paying for roughly 3 years of the college by doing 100 a month now for 5 years and then increasing that to $350 per month starting at age five.
Well, I like this illustration you have here where it kind of talks about ways to save. And again, I'm gonna pull back to the private university. I'm going to keep going back to that analogy.
All right.
That's the big one, right? Because if you can hit that one, you can hit all the other ones.
Yeah,
right?
The other ones are gravy compared to that one.
And that's where my financial planner really earns their money.
That's right.
Right? if all they're getting me is 16 grand over 18 years, not that exciting. If they're getting me $400,000 over 18 years, that gets me excited.
Yeah, that's right.
So you talk about the potential to have some kind of in-home care, a nanny, a babysitter, something like that, that is there while the kids are not in school. And then when they go to school, some of that expense for a nanny or a babysitter goes away.
That's right.
And the general idea here, which I think is a really good one, is you continue to pay as if you still had a babysitter, but the money ends up going into the college tuition account.
That's correct. Right now, my own daughter, 3 years old, going to a preschool that we pay for, roughly costs around $800 a month. She goes into kindergarten. That should end as long as she goes to a public school.
That should end.
I would hope so. And that money could easily be funneled into a 529 for her. However, I also have a newborn. I have a 5 months who will take that over for a few years, and then we can funnel that into the 529.
Yeah, when you say, I think good perspective is important, because when someone says, say, $700, $800, $1,000, let's just round it to $1,000 a month to put away per kid for 18 years, I mean, people may say they have no big deal, or people may say no way. But in reality, it's kind of analogous to what you're paying now for childcare, and as you mentioned, preschool, which I wasn't even thinking of, which you're able to do now, obviously, right? You're doing it. Yep. And to continue that process certainly makes a lot of sense. So instead of putting that money in your pocket for 3 or 4 extra Starbucks a month, you're sending it off to, I guess in your case, you're suggesting a 529 plan. And that's one of the things that we will also talk about a little bit ahead in the show is the different type of plans. We've talked about 529 a lot, but there are other types, and we certainly will go through those. But just want to come back one more time to the cost of attendance. So you've got about $8,000 per year for community college, $44,000 for public university. That'd be like the UC system.
Yep.
Is that kind of
that's
okay?
Correct.
Got it. And then private university as much as $100,000. Of course, those are times 2 or 4, depending on exactly, you know, community college would be 2 years and private university would be 4.
Yep.
That's scary.
Yeah, it's a little bit daunting when you look at that big number and you say, how in the heck am I going to take care of this? And a couple of things that I emphasize when I'm talking to my clients about this is, one, don't feel bad if you're not going to be able to take care of all of it. A lot of us have had student loans and been able to make it. But by being able to put some aside and start focusing early, you can make big dents in that dollar amount down line. And the key is starting early. The bigger chunk you can start early, that money has more years to grow.
We're talking with Sean Manette. He's a financial advisor with Edward Jones, 619-497-0019. His number is 619-497-0019. So when you sit down with people, Sean, and you show them this information, how many people are blown away? I mean, this is I knew the statistic would be staggering. I knew that I wouldn't like the number you showed me.
Yep.
I was prepared to not like it, but I would imagine a lot of people that you sit down with aren't terribly happy with this $100,000 number. Is this common? I mean, are people prepared for this that you meet with?
It's a good question. Some of them are and some of them aren't. And the biggest thing that, again, I'm gonna keep beating this down, is the biggest thing is if I can sit with them early, then that number becomes much more attainable. Because the difference between saying, all right, your kid's 8, now we're going to have to start throwing in $1,000 to really make a dent. And people look at me like, blank face, like $1,000, where am I going to pull that up? I'm not saving $1,000 now, versus saying, hey, your child's newborn, they're under 1 year, let's start with the $200. Can you do that? Yeah, that fits in the budget. Okay. And then, just like anything else, every year, hey, let's try to increase this. You know, you got to raise at work, increase your contribution. No different than you would if you had a 401k or whatever at work. That's automatically going to go up as you get a raise. Do the same thing with a 529. You can see rewards as we showed you by going from $100 per month and then upping that to $350.
Sean, can I ask you a question? The $100 or $350, is that per couple or is that per individual?
It's per beneficiary.
It's per kid.
Per kid, okay. So we're looking at it per kid. So in my case, I have 2, so
double it.
Yeah, double it.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay, so last question before we get off this subject here. 2 kids. Let's say that I'm killing it. I'm able to put away $1,000 per kid for 18 years. So I have $400,000 times 2, $800,000 in this 529 plan in 18 years from now, right?
Yep.
Kid 1 becomes a rock star. Kid 2 becomes a rock star.
Yep.
I got all this money in the beneficiary. I only got 2 kids. Now what?
So there's a couple things that you could do. One, you could change the beneficiary again. You could give it to nephews, nieces, whoever you might want to if you're so inclined to. Maybe you yourself want to take some classes of some sort. You can use them on yourself. However, you can always get the money out. The difference is if the money was used for educational purposes, then it's tax-free, which is why we like the 529. So you might have invested over the lifetime $300,000, let's say, but it grew to $800,000. That gap there is all tax-free. if you end up not using it for education, you're going to have to pay taxes. Well, here's the news. You would have anyway. You would have used that money and saved it, and you would have paid taxes anyway. So it's really not that bad of a deal.
So let me make sure I'm clear. Tax-free. Money I put in is post-tax, correct?
Money you put in is post-tax.
Post-tax, and it grows tax-free.
Yep, there'll be no federal tax on that.
So I get a 30-some percent loan from the government for 18 years to help support my kids' college fund.
That's correct.
And if they don't go to college, I end up paying taxes on it normally.
You would have.
There's no downside.
Yeah, you would have paid the capital gains tax.
There's
no downside. Really, there's not. That's one of the reasons why I like it. You know, it's just a good place to be able to put your contributions, let them grow, not have to worry about the federal tax as far as the growth of those assets, and then use them to help the child have education. And again, you can have everyone can contribute to this. It's not restricted to just the parents.
We're talking with Sean Manat, Edward Jones financial advisor, talking about college savings plans and been focusing on the 529 plan. When we come back, we're going to hear more from Chris McCurgy and then back to Sean with other types of college savings plans that are out there ahead of us when we come back. Welcome back. We've been talking with Sean Manat, financial advisor with Edward Jones. Basics of retirement planning, focused on the 529 plan, and scared us all with his big numbers in terms of how much college is going to cost 18 years from now. Shifting gears back to Chris McCurgy, estate planning attorney, and we were discussing how life changes and how the documents need to change to correspond with life. And I guess the four stages would be single, married, kids, after kids. That is our general focus, right? And
absolutely.
We talked about trust and will, and probably we'll come back to that a little bit and how important those are and how those change. But you have on here advanced healthcare directives and financial power of attorney. What in the world is that?
Well, think of it this way. You know, if you're incapacitated and unable to make decisions on your behalf, well, who do you trust to make those decisions? If you're incapacitated, who's going to pay your bills? Your mortgage, because those things are still due, right? Your mortgage is still due. Your bills are still due. Well, somebody has to be in charge of that at that point. So who do you assign as your financial power attorney? That's what the power attorney basically deals with. The Advanced Healthcare Directive deals with your healthcare issues. Who manages your healthcare decisions on your behalf? Who's able to communicate with the doctors? Those are key decisions that only somebody you designate can really do that, especially if incapacitated.
Is this common that people have an advanced healthcare directive set
Is
up?
It common? No. But if you create a proper estate plan package, absolutely. It's something that's included in all my estate plan packages. An advanced healthcare directives, a financial power attorney, a trust, a will, they're all included in that package, and you want to make sure there are. And people don't realize this, but planning for incapacity is one of the more important things about the estate plan aspect.
Yeah, life planning.
Absolutely.
Right? Not necessarily death planning, but life planning.
Life planning.
And it seems... I mean, I'm awestruck by the amount of the high percentage that doesn't have this stuff in place. I mean, it just seems like so many people are setting themselves up for failure without, I mean, Terry Schiavo, right? This is a case.
Exactly what I was going to mention.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, that was an issue. We all heard about it for years. The battle between the husband and his wife's family, that could have been prevented. You know, that issue could have been prevented. And having the advanced healthcare directives in place will let them know what you want your decisions to be on behalf of you if you're incapacitated. What kind of end-of-life decisions do you want? You choose that. That way, it takes the burden off your family members.
So refresh our memory. What was the argument they were having and the final resolution, and what would have prevented it?
To put it simply, I think the parents wanted the daughter not taking off life support. The husband did want to take off life support. And that was the battle back and forth. They went to court, and it breaks families. You know, it ruins families, and it's unfair to either party. Right.
And so they were kind of guessing as to what she wanted.
Yeah.
Is that what
I mean,
they were?
The parents were claiming, I believe, that if I'm correct, they were claiming that they know the daughter's wishes, and the husband says, "Well, no, I knew her wishes better because you know she was my wife," and back and forth.
And it was it was a long time.
It was
time,
a long time. I couldn't tell you the exact year, how many years it was, but it was a while. I mean, it was in the news for a long time. I'm not quite sure what the resolution they came to. I think she was obviously eventually taken off life support, but that was a long time. It was in the news every day.
Yeah. And so what if she would have had what in place would that have been prevented?
The advanced healthcare directives. If they
advanced
were in
place. Healthcare directives. This is a document
Absolutely.
That would say, if X, Y, and Z happens to me, pull the plug.
Yeah. I mean, some people don't want to be on life support. I know for a fact that that's one of my wishes. I don't want to be kept. If I'm gone, I don't want to be kept alive because of tubes and pills and powders. Right? Let me go. And those decisions are in there so my family doesn't have to make the decision themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Those are tough decisions to make. No one wants to make a decision that could impact their well-being later on. Imagine somebody telling the doctor, oh, take him off the plug, and then thinking later, well, was that the right decision? That's unfair for that person. It's going to affect them for the rest of their lives. And that's one of the reasons why you put this in place. And it's to be selfless. It's to ensure that your family is protected and they don't have to go through the stress of this tough decision later on.
Well, can you imagine a situation where you have to sue your wife's parents to pull the plug?
Yeah.
I mean, that does not seem like an easy one to do.
Not at all.
And with the understanding that Mr. Shiva was doing what his wife wanted. I mean, I think that was the idea. They were both guessing as what she wanted because she didn't write it down.
No one knew. No one knew for a fact. I mean, they all claimed they did, but I understand where the parents were coming from. This is their child. They don't want to let her go. I get that. I've known people who've gone through this personally in large families where certain siblings will state, well, no, I want to keep my dad around. And the other half are saying, well, no, he's already gone. Why are we letting him suffer? Let this decision be made by the individual themselves.
We're talking with Chris McCurgy, estate planning attorney. His website, kmsdlawoffice.com. That's the website. KMSDlawoffice.com. We talked a little bit about advanced healthcare directive, and we're thinking 50% of people out there don't have such a thing.
I would say more.
More than 50%.
Yeah.
Wow. And so taking all the money out, there may be some a trust and will. Maybe you think those are only for the Rockefellers, right? But we're all alive. there's nobody out there that says, I'm not alive, thus I don't want to make decisions about my life. This is very much in everybody's court, so to speak, right?
It is. I mean, it doesn't matter who you are. We deal with this on a regular basis. We're all alive, and at some point we're going to pass away, and we have families we care about and love, and we want to ensure that they're taken care of when we're done. You can compare. And I mean, if you want to look at the celebrities, you can compare, was it Philip Seymour Hoffman versus Paul Walker? Philip Seymour Hoffman had a will in place, which ended up being a very public document. You can actually go online and pull it up and find out every single word that was written in there. And you can look at Paul Walker, and Paul Walker had a trust in place. Granted, he didn't update the trust for a while, but he had a trust in place, which explained his wishes and what he wanted done. It didn't protect his assets as well as he'd hoped because he hadn't updated it for a long time from what I heard.
Got it. That's a good analogy. I heard a lot of Philip Seymour Hoffman's money did not go to his kids.
I didn't. Well, actually, from what I heard, he actually didn't want it to go to his
kids. Right, right.
But,
didn't want it to. That was how it's set up.
But yeah, but the interesting thing was it was very public.
Yeah.
I don't think he intended that knowledge to be public.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think any father would want the world to know that I don't want any money to go to my kids or a certain amount not to go to my kids. I don't think anybody wants that. And that's the difference. What people don't realize is the probate process is very public, whereas the creating estate plan and having trust in place, it's a private process. It's not public. We don't take an ad out in the newspaper, right? We don't invite creditors to come and file a creditor claim for you similar to a probate. So
we're talking with Chris McCurgy, estate planning attorney. His website, kmsdlawoffice.com. That's the website, kmsdlawoffice.com. Even if you, for some reason, can't justify, I don't have enough money to justify a will or trust, which I'm going to say you probably do. But let's just throw that out, and for some reason you've got absolutely nothing. I don't need a will. I don't need a trust because I've got absolutely nothing. I can't imagine a situation where having an advanced health care directive in place is not in the best interest of everybody.
Me neither. And I agree with you 110%. It's necessary.
Does it take to get one? I sit with you, blah, blah, blah. You wave your wand, paperwork here, sign there. But what's the process?
Well,
How long does it take?
We sit down, we talk to the client, and we understand their wishes. We see what they want to do. We sit down and explain to them the repercussions of certain actions versus not taking those actions. And once they understand what they're sitting in front of, once they understand what they're getting, they know what's right and they know what's wrong. And they'll take the decision right then and there themselves.
Makes sense. And so the process is, would you say, less than a week?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, just to create an advanced healthcare directive, probably less than that, you know. As long as the client is on the same page and understands what he wants and is able to make that decision for himself, right? You want to make sure the client has the capacity at that point. You know, if the client is not of sound mind and can't make a proper decision, then obviously there's other issues there. But, you know, right. As long as they can make the decision, sure, you know, they can get a power of attorney taken care of and an advanced healthcare directive taken care of.
So let's say I do that. I come in your office and I leave your office with this piece of paper, right? Probably notarized, all official, stamped, sealed, notebook, however you do it.
Absolutely.
And I stick this thing and I stick it on my shelf.
Yep.
Right? Then 30 years from now, something happens to me and I, you know, it needs to be pulled out,
yep.
Right? How do, this has kind of dawned on me, how do my children know where to go to find this?
Well, you know, I tell my clients this all the time. Your estate plan is not a secretive document that you hide in the cellar in a specialized safe. You want those documents to be accessible by the individuals who are going to be using them. So if you create an estate plan and I give you an estate plan binder, I don't want that binder hidden someplace. Let it be accessible. Put it on a bookshelf. That way, if somebody knows that if something were to happen to you, they can see the binder that says, you know, the Ryan White's estate plan, it's available to access. Also, I tell them, send a copy, a PDF copy to your trustee. Let that be in the hand of the trustee. And obviously, you've probably talked to the trustee at that point, and they understand they're the trustee. They understand they have the power of attorney. They understand they have the right to control your advanced healthcare directive once you're incapacitated. So now, if something were to happen to you, the trustee has a PDF copy. They have my information. They can contact me directly, and I can guide them along the process. Or they can walk into your house, go up to the bookshelf, and grab your estate plan binder, which has all the documents there notarized and ready to go.
Ready to go. We're talking with Chris McCurgy, estate planning attorney. His website, kmsdlawoffice.com. That's his website, kmsdlawoffice.com. When we come back, we're going to hear more with Sean Manette about different types of college planning, as well as some other ways of saving, ways to save smarter, and, you know, some additional stuff to the 529 plan. There's other programs out there. We'll hear more about it when we come back. Welcome back. We've been talking with Chris McCurgy, estate planning attorney. His website, kmsdlawoffice.com. Shifting gears here to Sean Manette, Edward Jones financial advisor. We've been concentrating on 529 plans and the ability to assign the beneficiary of that to another person was brought up as a benefit. And I think that is only really truly a benefit when understood in context of what other plans exist out there. Give us some idea of what other plans are out there.
Great. One of them is a Coverdell Education Savings Account. Anyone pretty much can contribute. There are some limitations, though, to the amount that can be contributed. For instance, you can only contribute $2,000 per year combined per beneficiary.
That's not going to get you anywhere.
So, yeah, if you're sending your kid off to, you know, the private school and you're late at all, you're not going to be able to put enough in there to really make the contribution that you'd want. Another one is the custodial account. Custodial account, you open it up with your child's name. You can put money in there. However, you basically lose control at legal age of 18. So now you've left your kid with rights to basically run the gamut on those funds. So that's something that we always are a little bit leery of and something that we tend to not go towards.
Well, do I get the tax savings with a custodial account?
A portion of income may be offset by standard deductions. Some income may be taxed at the beneficiaries or the parents' rate.
So you get the benefit of the kid's tax rate.
Right. It's not the same as getting the tax.
It's not tax-free growth.
Right, through the federal tax bracket. And then there's zero coupon bonds. So you could buy a zero coupon bond, a municipal bond. And the one advantage of that is that you were basically taking out the volatility of the investment other than a default by that particular issuer of the bond. So you could say, I'll buy a bond, I'll put $2,000 in this, and it's an 18-year maturity, and in 18 years, you'll know that that bond, just throwing out a number, your $2,000 is going to be worth $10,000. So you'll know that there's not going to be the volatility there. And those, if they're a municipal bond, which is usually what we do for those zero coupon bonds, those are also tax-free. However, you're also limited on your upside. It's going to have a set coupon rate. That coupon rate might be 5.5% or 5% tax-free per year. So if the market, in the meantime, over the next 18 years, averaged 9%, you missed out on all that other growth and the compounding of it. So that's a little something different, too. But of the other ones, that's one that we have used here and there.
Well, certainly does seem, and I have a 529 myself, it certainly does seem that the 529 offers the best, I guess it would be best combination of factors, the biggest one being the tax-deferred growth, or tax-free growth, tax-free growth. And that's a lot of what we're banking on, because if we're describing that I'm making 7% on my money and college is going up at 5%, there's only a 2% difference, right?
We got to make that spread.
You got to make that spread. And if you're paying taxes, taxes are easily 2%.
They can suck it right out.
So it's gone. It's relying on, of course, the monthly contributions, but also compounding interest.
That's correct.
To gain to that $400,000 for the MIT, Stanford, et cetera, et cetera. Got it. That certainly does make a lot of sense.
Yeah, huge benefit there.
So I'm pretty sure I know the answer to this question, but when should I start saving and when is it too late?
Yesterday is when you should have started saving.
Okay, got it.
And it's
too late.
It's too late when they're sending out their applications. You're not really going to get much then. You want to start now. If you don't have something, get it in place. It's not a complicated matter to set up. You simply fill out the 529 form for wherever it's going to be held. You put you, yourself, a spouse as the owner. The beneficiary is going to be your child that you have or child soon to be. And then you start making contributions. And, you know, at our office, we'll even send out cards to the grandparents or different people if they want us to, saying, hey, congratulations. You know, this is what's going on to try to
write a check.
Yeah, try to help stoke the fire there a little bit.
I want to talk to you about the grandparents' contribution. And this may be a question more for a CPA, but is there a gift tax issue if the grandparents want to contribute to the 529 plan?
You can contribute actually up to five times the amount of the current gift tax limitations.
Per year.
In 1 year. And then have that deducted over a five-year period. The advantage is that you're able to put all the money in to work for the next 5 years, rather than having to wait. So you could front load it, and then deduct it over a five-year.
So you still compounded the interest over the period of time.
That's right.
So is it what $13,000?
It's actually $14,000.
$14,000 is the gift tax maximum, or tax-free gift maximum.
Exactly.
Right. And so I can front load, give 5 years of $14,000. To my kid or grandparents to the kid, to the 529 plan, and then nothing for the next 5 years, obviously,
right.
And hence the front-loading part.
So you're throwing in 70 grand, letting it sit there and roll.
Fantastic. I'm just really hoping my dad's listening to this right now.
I will send him a copy.
That's right.
Please, somebody do.
So in his case, Timmy isn't born yet.
That's right.
Can we have a 529 without Timmy being born?
Absolutely. You can have a 529. So Chris could open up a 529. He's the owner, and his wife could be the beneficiary. And then you fund it, and then once Timmy's born, Timmy's the beneficiary.
So we think about it as being for our kids' education, but it's just for education in general.
It's an education savings plan in general. Yeah, that is correct. And that's another advantage. You can change those beneficiaries. And as long as the money that comes out is used for higher education, you're avoiding that federal tax.
So would like air conditioning school count?
If you can get federal funding for it, absolutely.
You can get federal funding for it.
Yeah. So
I watched the middle last night. He went to air conditioning school. So,
if you can get federal funding, then you can use it for that tuition, the books, the computers, and everything else that you're going to use for that education.
Got it. We're talking with Sean Manat, Edward Jones Financial Advisor. His phone number is 619-497-0019, 619-497-0019. We just have a few minutes left here, but this is something that I'm often torn with. Now, balancing my own retirement with my kids' education.
Mm-hmm.
And one would think if I put enough money in my kids' education, they should take care of me in retirement, right? So I could, you know, in a perfect world, give enough money to them, they'll give it back. But let's just say that that's not what I want to bank on.
Right.
What's the right balance I should have? And I would imagine this is a big concern for a lot of your people.
Right. So there isn't a number that I can throw at you that say, this is what you should do, because every case is different. What we do is basically we run a financial assessment, and we look at okay, what do we need for retirement? And there's some variables that you can tinker with there. One can be, when do we want to retire? Originally at 65. Well, you could up it to 67 and be able to throw more into the education plan if you want to do that, so that you can have those extra monies being saved. If you want to retire at 65 and that's you're bent on that, then you're going to have to obviously contribute lower. Again, try to convince the kid that, hey, that community college sure does look nice, because that's going to save you some money. The other thing that I always like to say when I'm talking to my clients is, the fact of the matter is you, if you're ready to retire and you've done, you know, you've put in your time, you've worked for 40 years and you're done, you're ready to hang them up, you can't go down to the bank and say, hey, I'm ready to retire, I'd like to take out a loan now and pay for my retirement. You're going to get laughed out of the front door. However, you can go to the bank and say, hey, I'd like to apply for my financial aid, I'd like to look for scholarships, I'd like to look for grants, and then I'd like to take out a loan for my college. And those are things that you can do. So I'm always going to emphasize that let's first look at funding the retirement, and then we're going to go to education. As much as I love my kids, I don't want my kids to pay for me during retirement, and I certainly don't want to have to go back and be working until I'm 90 as well.
That's good advice. So I think what you're saying is a customized plan based on the age of the kids, yep, situation, income. I mean, that makes a lot of sense. It's not, there's no,
that's right,
one number. It's a formula.
It's a formula
that gets applied based on the different variables in your life.
And as you change, your income is adjusted, so can the plan, as far as what you're contributing to it as well.
So can the plan.
Yep.
Talking with Sean Manat, financial advisor, Edward Jones, 619-497-0019. One more time, 619-497-0019. Never too early to start saving for your kids or just any college, higher education, but mostly kids. Chris has got one in, what, -2 months, right?
Negative two months,
and it's time. You know, he can go ahead and start putting money away in his 529 plan. It's time to do so to hit that high mark of $100,000 a year, which is the projection, $400,000 over, of course, 4 years. Let's hope they get out in 4 years.
That's right.
I mean, college may very well be 5 years from now. Wouldn't that be a scary thought?
But college is looking good right now.
Was for me.
You're talking $7,000-$8,000 a month put away to hit that number. It's not too late. It's time to reach out to Sean, 619-497-0019. One more time, 619-497-0019. And even if for some crazy reason you don't think you have enough money to justify a trust, you don't think you have enough money to justify a will, and I assure you, you do, but if for some crazy reason you don't think you do, you still need an advanced healthcare directive and also a power of attorney. Reach out to Chris McCurgy, estate planning attorney, kmsdlawoffice.com, kmsdlawoffice.com. He can tell you how putting the appropriate documents in place is so much cheaper than running your assets through probate, so much less public, so much less painful, so much shorter too. Probate is not a short process, right?
Nope. Takes over a year sometimes.
Takes well over a year. And of course, all the bills have to be paid at that time, right?
Exactly.
The mortgage, you know, B of A doesn't say, we'll just wait for a year till you get that worked out. You still got to make mortgage payments. The San Diego County Assessor's not going to wait for tax payments.
Nope.
Everything still has to be paid while the money sits in probate.
It's a pain, people.
Reach out to Chris McCurgy, his website, kmsdlawoffice.com. That's the website, kmsdlawoffice.com. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
Stay tuned. Coming up next, San Diego Spotlight.